Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
I'm Lisa Stone, and you're listening to Parenting Aces. Welcome to Season 12 of the Parenting Aces podcast, a proud member of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and this week I have a fellow tennis parent, an incredible volunteer, an incredible supporter of the game of tennis, Violet Clark. Violet is the mom of three tennis-playing daughters, the youngest of whom, Gabby, went to Emory University, where she won the NCAA singles championship as a sophomore and again as a senior. So winning two times that NCAA championship is just unbelievable. But I am so excited for you guys to hear from Violet. She shares her family's journey in tennis, her own journey as a volunteer in all different kinds of ways, but most notably as a volunteer with USTA, which of course is the governing body of American tennis. So without further ado, I bring you Vi Clark.
Introducing Coco Gauff's signature shoe, more than just a tennis shoe. It's a fusion of 90s-inspired style and cutting-edge performance technology. With its sleek mid-cut silhouette, it's designed to enhance speed and power on the court. The multi-piece upper construction delivers high-energy return for players of all levels. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just starting out, the Coco CG1 empowers you to dominate the game. Learn more and purchase the Coco CG1 at NewBalance.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Clark. Vi Clark, it is such a pleasure to meet you and to have you on the podcast. I could not be more excited to talk to a fellow tennis parent, somebody who's been in the trenches, and like me, somebody whose kids are through the process, but you're still out in the trenches. I love it.
Well, thank you, Lisa. I appreciate the invite. Always an opportunity to, I love the opportunity to be able to speak to parents about my experiences and also to maybe talk about some non-traditional approaches to your kids playing tennis through the system. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's just jump right in. And I want to know how tennis came to be part of your life and not just part of your life, like a commanding presence in your life.
Yeah. So my, again, I'm primarily a tennis volunteer at this point, which started through my children. Quick story. Our family started playing tennis because we used to vacation in the Outer Banks of North Carolina. And on the Outer Banks, it's great when it's the beach, when the sun's out on the beach, but when it's not, then you have to find something indoors. And we always had like 10 kids. There were 10 kids, six families or whatever. And so when it would rain, we'd go to the local tennis club and the tennis pro would have an activity for the kids like all morning. So it was great. And that's how we got introduced. And my oldest daughter came back and she was probably about 10 or 11 at that point. And when she came home, she decided she wanted to play. And so we looked at a number of programs, went to a number of clubs, and that really wasn't her cup of tea until we found a program called Love to Serve, which is a grassroots program, African-American centric on the south side of Chicago. And she found her community with Love to Serve. And that's where we started. And I started volunteering and she started playing and we traveled with them and played tournaments with them. And that's how we got connected. So again, my approach to the game comes from all of the benefits that the game has to offer our kids and our families. And as the kids have grown, we use tennis metaphors really to talk about life. So tennis is really a metaphor for raising decent humans. So that's sort of how we got introduced to the game.
You and I definitely speak the same language. I love it. Because I talk about that a lot too with the Parenting Aces community that, you know, these lessons that our kids are learning on the tennis court, yes, they serve them well for the years that they're competing as tennis players. But my goodness, once they get out into the real world, they start to really realize that how valuable those lessons are and how useful they are in interpersonal relations, in professional relations, everything.
Right. And if you look at, especially when you start talking about tennis and teams, when you look at all of the literature about who are the most successful in business and who are most successful in life, it's people who have been part of teams. And that's another reason why being part of tennis, especially if you're going to play collegiately or you're going to play local team competition, is valuable, because you do learn all of those skills in business, whether you're the leader of the team or whether you're the sixth person on the bench and your contributions to the team, right? It's, you know, it's still about how do you contribute and how do you bring your value forward? And again, tennis is a perfect way to learn those lessons.
Yeah, for sure. I want to talk a little bit more about Love to Serve and this whole notion of training and competing as a team from the get-go, because my experience in tennis with my son was very individual, right? It was find the coach, you know, he would go to drills, yes, and be in a group, but, you know, they weren't traveling as a group to tournaments. They weren't competing as a group. It was very much, you know, dog eat dog out there and, you know, fighting for your spot. In terms of getting attention from the coach, getting that one-on-one time and things like that. So I'm very intrigued by what Love to Serve is and does and how you found it.
Yeah, so we found it just by asking people, because my daughter really wanted to play and the tennis club scene was just, she wasn't interested in that. And finally somebody said, hey, there's this community organization on the South Side. You should go look into it, check it out. So we went. And again, they were primarily in the summers at that point. And then they did have some indoor classes as the fall approach, but it was primarily during the outdoor season. But what Love to Serve did is it first of all, the goal was to identify tennis as a means for African-Americans to go to college, mm-hmm. right? And to play tennis and learn the game. And it was started by Lamont Bryant, who really learned, he was more of a gym teacher who learned the game, and then he was teaching the community how to play. And so our whole introduction to tennis was from the team perspective first. So the kids would be really young. And so they would start, like Gabby started with Love to Serve probably at six, actually playing tournaments, because I told her she had to learn how to, my youngest, I told her she had to learn how to keep score before she could play a tournament. That was my one rule. You know, you have to defend yourself on the court. But what we would do is we would travel as a group to Indianapolis for a tennis tournament. And all the kids would have three skirts or three pair of shorts, and you'd have white one and a red one and a black one, and they'd all have Love to Serve t-shirts, and everybody would go and watch each other play their matches and root each other on. But again, in terms of tennis being a way to learn life skills, Lamont would give the kids envelopes with money in it for each meal. So as we stopped at the restaurant, the kids had to use their money, learn how to tip, learn which forks to use at the restaurant, learn how to engage with the wait staff. And so from the time we would leave the bus stop, because we'd travel on a big bus, to where we got to where we're going, the kids were learning how to live life. Like, how do you count your change and all of that from 6 years old all the way up to like 18. And so we spent a lot of time. Yes, practices were fun, but it was more in the team concept than an individual concept. Yes, you had individual tournaments and matches to play, but you were going as the Love to Serve team. So when you'd show up in uniform, everybody knew you were from Love to Serve, and you were expected to behave well, and you were expected to be good sports and all of those things. And so that's how we got introduced to the game, which is like how the kids get introduced to soccer, right? It's a team by team. And it's, to me, there's so much value in that interaction that this, I prefer tennis, but the sport doesn't actually matter, right? It can be track, it can be soccer, it can be lacrosse, it can be anything else. But, you know, how do you build relationships? How do you practice? Do you persevere? Do you work hard? Like, what are you really doing to build your own self-esteem and to be able to do something that you enjoy, but you also learn something from? So,
yeah,
but that's how we got started.
I just love that. And so lest anybody listening to this think that Vi started her kids in this, you know, grassroots program and, you know, they became decent players. Let's just kind of jump ahead to Gabby's accomplishments, because I just want everybody to know Gabby went on to play college tennis at Emory University, went on to win the individual singles championship, not once, but twice, first year as a sophomore. And this was at the Division III level. But Emory University, again, for those who think Division III is the bottom of the college food chain, you are grandly mistaken. Emory University could compete with any collegiate tennis team from any division on any day and come out ahead. So let's just be clear about the environment that she was competing in and achieving such success, all as a result of starting in a grassroots team environment that took her through to this incredible college experience. So from the time that she started, and your other two daughters as well, started with Love to Serve, what was the progression in terms of playing tournaments, developing as tennis players, but then also balancing that with academic development too?
Yeah, so that's what was so great about Love to Serve. They definitely had the coaching staff and all of the skills to develop the tennis players, right? If you've got good athletes, you've got kids who work hard, you've got kids to show up at practice and want to do things, then they'll learn how to play the game. And so as my kids all played at different levels, my oldest daughter went to University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. She played club tennis there. She's the one that will play just for fun now. She didn't play D1, didn't get the scholarship and all that, but never tried to. That's not how she wanted to do it. My middle daughter played club tennis at Cornell for a while. She's still active. She volunteers with USTA. She's still very active in tennis. Loves the game, still very active. Gabby, as she went through the process, she developed. She wanted to play more, and she wanted to play more and more and more. Her decision to go to a D3 school, because I think that's really important, is that, yes, you're right. Emory had, especially at that time, they had a lot of the top 30 players nationally, or top 50 players nationally, right, in their classes. But that was because kids were making a decision at that time whether they wanted to play tennis or whether they wanted to have a college experience as well as get an education. Gabby's decision to go was based on the fact she wanted to get a quality education, she wanted competitive tennis, and she wanted to play high in the lineup. She didn't want to ride the bench. Now, she could have gone to D1, gotten a scholarship, probably, I don't know where she would have played, maybe three, maybe four, but she wouldn't have that those two national championships that she had. And she was playing at that time against other top players. And so I think, and to me, it's really not much different than the Ivies in terms of the level of education plus, you know, the level of tennis and all of those things. But she just worked hard. She's a great athlete. You know, she played two sports at Emory. So she played tennis and she ran track for 2 years, indoor track. But the development cycle was going through the process of the junior tournament cycle and all of those things. I will say if I had it to do over, she would have played half the tournaments. Mm. I just don't think at the end of the day, the tournaments themselves were the key. It was the competition, finding quality competition and quality coaching in the right environment is just as valuable from the tennis player's perspective as some of the national tournaments and things like that. So if for her, I'm not saying that's true for everybody, but for her, I would have probably reduced by at least a third the amount of coaching and the amount of things we did because she traveled with her coach to all the national tournaments. She was a top national player when she graduated from high school, all of those things. But I'm not sure that you have to do all of that and that you have to follow the crowd in terms of your child's development through the system or through the process. So, yeah.
Well, let's dig into that because that's very interesting. And I'm with you. I my son definitely played more tournaments than was necessary, and which probably led to a lot of strife and discord in the family. But
absolutely,
you know, it's very stressful on everybody. So let's talk about this kind of developmental pathway. And from the place you sit now on the backside of this journey three times over, if you were designing the perfect high school years, and I'm not going to start with the 10 and unders because that's a whole different animal, but let's start with high school years when the kids are starting to kind of understand that they've got to get in front of college coaches, that ratings and rankings are becoming, you know, the only thing they think and talk about for the good or the bad. And, you know, we can get into that if we have time, but what would you have done differently?
I probably would have focused on the development side of the game more so than the tournament side of the game. And that is, I'm not saying that we wouldn't have spent time working on the game, but I wouldn't have done all the travel. Mm-hmm. I just wouldn't have done it. Couple of reasons for it, right? If she had been home more, she would have probably enjoyed herself more. Her grades were fine. She was at a very competitive private school here in Chicago, University of Chicago Laboratory Schools, did fine. But I just wonder whether if we were taking one of those tournaments a month and spending just developing either with programs or groups or with her coach or footwork drills, something else to supplement it, I think she would have been as good or maybe even better as a player, right? Because you didn't need the tournament, you needed the development. Mm-hmm. And so what I would have done is I would have cut out some of the travel and supplemented it with just learning more things. She did start doing fitness and working with a trainer and doing some other things, which I thought ended up being more valuable than some of the tournament time, actually, yeah. Right? What she learned about her body and everything else. But I also think it's important to know why for the kids to know why they're doing it. She was not doing it for the scholarship. She was doing it because she loved the game. So scholarship wasn't part of our, if that's where she decided to go, fine. But she was doing it because she likes she loved the game. She loved to compete and that kind of thing. So I think, like, if you want to get that scholarship and that you have to do the tournaments to be on the coach's radar, then you might have to do that. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't our goal. That wasn't our goal. She, you know, we wanted to get into the right tournaments because she was recruited from clay courts by Emery's assistant coach at the time. But she was recruited for her doubles because mm-hmm. they needed the doubles point, right? And she ended up playing number one singles and doubles all 4 years, but that's why she was recruited. So I would just think about it differently. Like, what do you really want out of the experience? Mm-hmm. She knew she wanted a college experience. So, you know, knowing that now, and that's always what it was, why did I need to do all of that?
Yeah.
But I didn't know there was any other way. I didn't know there was an option because I went along with the crowd.
That's right.
Like, if everybody else was sending that.
We all do that because how are you supposed to know? And if you buck the crowd, you buck the system, all you hear is, well, why isn't she playing this tournament? Why aren't you traveling there? Why isn't you know, she's taking a day off. She's taking a week off. Like, what are you doing? And right. you start to doubt yourself. And as the parent, you know, God forbid your child doesn't reach their goal. And then it's your fault because you didn't let them do whatever it is. You know, it's a no win, I feel like.
I think there is a win once you realize that you don't feel guilty. Like, you know, your kid, you know, like I had to say to myself, like, stop. Like, I'm not going to just do this because everybody else is saying do it or go. I'll do as much as I can. But I, at the end of it's, you know, sometimes we want so much for them that it's us. Like, they're perfectly satisfied. And it's because we want so much for them. But it's, I think paying attention to what the child really wants matters more at the end. So at the end, I was a little better about, you want to go to the concert, you know what, you won't play this weekend. And then I think about, well, if I had done that junior year, that probably, and you know what, I could have done that some freshman year as well. And maybe, you know, that freshman, that one exam that she really didn't do that well on freshman year, she probably would have done better if I'd let her stay and go to the party, right? So, you know, so in retrospect, I would have, you know, lifted my foot off the accelerator a little bit, because it was, should have been more about what she wanted as opposed to what these parents were telling me I should do.
Right.
And as a parent, we just sometimes need to, you know, take a deep breath, step back and say, why are we really doing it? And does that make sense for our family?
Well, and also to trust your gut, right?
I mean,
as you've said numerous times already, nobody knows your kid like you do. And you have to trust yourself as the parent to make the decisions that are right for that particular child in that particular moment. And it's not to say that what's right for one of your children is necessarily right for the other of your children. But again, it's that trust. And I think as parents, we don't have enough trust in our gut. We don't pay close enough attention because we are, you know, so bombarded with information from the outside and, you know, that fear of, oh my gosh, if I don't do this, my child's going to fall behind.
Well, and it's also that we're saying, well, we'll look like bad parents. and you know, it's like, yeah, like you, well, you're not going to do what? And then it's like, oh my goodness, I look like I'm a bad parent. Well, no, actually I'm not going to do that because I'm making the decision that's best for my family, right? Or for my child or whatever. The other part of it is separating yourself from your child and their tennis journey.
Yeah.
Right. Their tennis journey is going to be different. It's so hard. You know, even like my kids are all grown, everybody's over 30, right? And I'm still in their business. Like, well, can't you do it this way? Yeah. But, you know, or somebody said that this was a good opportunity for you. You want to try it? And then I have to say, okay, you all are adults. You know, you've learned how to make really good decisions for yourself. And that's what you're trying to do, even in high school, right? You're trying to teach them how to make good decisions. So when they're doing things, trying to make decisions for themselves, you got to let go of the reins some. And I would have done it more in the tennis context if I had the maturity about this subject then as I do now. She was probably right. She didn't need to do everything that I was making her do.
Yeah.
So
let me just ask you, because I'm very cognizant that we are on a tight time frame here. I've got so much I want to talk to you about. What was your role in the college recruiting or just college application and decision process with your girls? And was it different for each one? Do you feel like you learned from, you know, daughter number one to daughter number two to daughter number three, or were you starting at ground zero each time?
No, so one and two really weren't that interested in playing on the team. One, definitely not. Mm-hmm. Two would have, but she went to Cornell. She went to the hotel school. She was really more into the school than the team. And that's why she played club a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so that was, you know, that's why she did that. So that was different. It was different for Gabby, though, because she did want to play on the team. Mm-hmm. But I had been in the system enough that I knew sort of how it worked. She's also a self-starter, so that, and very independent. So she did it herself. Okay. When coaches would reach out, she would respond to the one she was interested in, not interested in. When I would try to push schools on her or go do it, she would go or she would do, but they all turned out to be disasters because she didn't want to do it. So I learned pretty quickly just to back off and let her handle it. And so at the end, Emory was the place she wanted to go. And that's what she pushed for. And she worked with Amy to get there. And that's then the rest is history, so to speak. So
how did she learn about Emory? I mean, she grew up in Chicago. Emory's in Atlanta, just for those of you who don't know. And it's a smaller school. So it's, you know, it's not a big rah-rah football school that everybody has heard of.
Yeah. So University of Chicago Lab School actually had a couple of other people who had gone to Emory before. There were a couple of girls who played for Emory that Gabby had been in groups with. So she had heard of Emory. But in her high school, they do a really good job of college prep, helping the counselors, helping them to determine schools. Mm-hmm. So Emory was not on her list until after Clay course.
Okay.
But once she was approached by Meredith, the coach, to be interested, then we put it on her list. Mm-hmm. So she had sort of heard of it. She knew of it. But then once she saw the academic level, the team level, it was sort of like, exactly what she wanted in a college experience. So at that point, she was looking at those, you know, the D3 schools, those schools like that, or the Ivies. And it just so happened that all of it worked out for Emory. But she had heard of Emory. She had her school has great college counseling. And so that's how it all came together.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Was professional tennis ever on her radar?
Not really. Yeah, no, that was never her goal. You know, again, parents looking at her talent and I'm like, wow, you could really do this. And she was like, no, that's not what I want to do. So it's at some point I thought it was for her, but she never thought it was for her. And so, no, but she's, you know, she's working in sports now, right? She's working for the LA 2028 Olympics. So that's, you know, so sport is where she ended up, but not as a professional tennis player.
I love it. But, you know, she brings an intimate knowledge of what it means to be an athlete, what it means to be a competitor. So working in sports as a former competitive athlete herself has to be such a huge advantage and make her that much more marketable, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, there are so few women in sports. So she's working in sports at a level that we need to show up, right? We need more women in sport, just sports executives and all through sport in general. So again, tennis served a purpose that we couldn't have foreseen at the time, right? And all the things she learned and the contacts she made and how to engage with people have helped her to have a really successful career in sports. So
yeah, I love that.
So
okay, so your kids are grown. I'm watching the clock. I'm like, oh my gosh,
that's fine. Oh, we can always do a part two some other if you want to some other day.
For sure. But you are still very active with USTA in the Chicago area, USTA Midwest. What is your role today? What area?
So actually I'm on the national board, USTA National Board. And I've been on the national board. This is my third term, so it's my fifth year. So I have always been a volunteer, starting with Love to Serve. That's how I get connected to the game. And I've been a volunteer since then. So I did work with the Chicago District. I volunteered Love to Serve on their board, Midwest section. I was a past president there as well. And now I am on the board. And actually, we have a board meeting in Colorado Springs on Thursday. So I'll be heading out that way Thursday morning. We are the governing body for the sport in the country. And so it gives me an opportunity to set some policy, to see what we're doing, to try to lend whatever experience or, you know, that I have that I can share with, you know, the country. We do everything from, you know, we're not just the U.S. Open. We do support And deliver all of the tennis throughout the United States. So we come in contact. Every child that plays tennis or every league player has somehow connected to the USTA. So, but I just, you know, this game has been really, really important to our family, at all the girls, right? And so therefore I feel the need to just give back, to share what I can share and, you know, to see where I can be of help. And so, you know, that's what we do.
All right. One last quick question.
Sure.
If our listeners want to get involved as a volunteer with USTA or with a local grassroots tennis organization, what would be your advice to how to get started?
Yeah, my advice would be to go on the website of their section, and basically go on the USTA website, put in your zip code and your address, and it will direct, if you're not already connected with the USTA, it will direct you to your local area and reach out to them to see where you can help or where, because you don't even have to have a child. Like, if you just want to help the community, you can find a local community tennis organization that might need some volunteers or need some board members or things of that nature. And you can just go on and then reach out to your local district or your local your local section and to see whether the volunteer opportunities are. That's the best way. Just go to the website or go to the website of your section or your district and, you know, ask where you can fit in.
Yeah.
And we are welcoming anybody who wants to come join us, because we love this game.
Yeah. We really do. And for those of us who, you know, tend to get dragged down by the negatives and focus on the things that aren't going right, what a wonderful way to facilitate change and, you know, be part of that change and help open the eyes of people that may be separated from what's happening on the ground and, you know, offering your insight and your experience. So,
right.
Thank you for continuing to volunteer at the level.
Yeah, and also, I mean, you also make a good point. The other place for people to go would be the USTA Foundation. Mm-hmm. Because the foundation is really, that's where our National Junior Tennis League program, and it's not league anymore, I forget what the new acronym is.
Junior Tennis Education and Learning or something?
Learning, yeah, NJTL. So yeah. That's where our NJTLs are housed. And for people who don't know, the whole purpose is to tie tennis with education. And so we have programs throughout the country where we're reaching into communities that are under-resourced and providing educational opportunities as well as tennis opportunities for those children, many of whom go on, or most of whom go on to be in maybe play in college, and get college scholarships. But if they don't get tennis scholarships, many of them get academic scholarships. So it's a way that tennis is impacting our communities in different ways. And so there are always volunteer opportunities at the NJTL level and at the foundation level. And there are also ways you can give to the foundation to support the efforts to grow the game and also to support young people and give them opportunities to really, that will really make a difference in their lives. And so that's why I volunteer.
Yes. Well, you are, you know, the billboard. You should be the spokesperson for every volunteer. And just as somebody who benefits from the work that you do, I want to say thank you and please keep giving.
Oh, I will. I think I'm hooked. You know, it's almost now like an addiction. I can't let it go. So
I know the feeling. I definitely know the feeling. Well, Violet, thank you so much for taking time out of your crazy busy life to chat with us at Parenting Aces. I definitely want to do a part two and, you know, dig a little deeper into your daughters and their life in tennis and your role in all of that. But it's just such a pleasure to meet you. And
I love a part
Amy
two.
Bryant for connecting us. So.
Yeah, thanks, Amy. One of my favorite people. And also on the part two, I will also would have some more information, like to share more about what's going on with USTA and how we're really trying to work with communities to, you know, to really change sort of the narrative around what tennis is and what the USTA is and all of those. We're really doing some new creative things that I think people would be interested in. So sure. I think it would be worth that to talk about. I always talk about my kids, so that's easy. So.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. Definitely have you back, and in the very near future, we'll connect offline and find another day to record. But in the meantime, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. It was really fun, and I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. To my listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. We will catch you next time on Parenting Aces.
I'm Lisa Stone, and you've been listening to the Parenting Aces podcast for tennis parents by a tennis parent. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to us and write a review on iTunes. For more information on navigating the junior and college tennis journey, please visit us online at parentingaces.com. Thanks for tuning in and sharing us with your tennis community.